KXNO. Keith Murphy.
You ain't first, you're last.
Andy Fails.
I pity the fool.
It's the Murph and Andy Show, powered by AD.
You can do it!
On 1460 KXNO.
And welcome to the Murph and Andy Show, 1460 KXNO, on a beautiful Thursday in the capital city of Des Moines. I am Andrew Downs, the producer of the show, and I am here all by myself. But have no fear, I'm not going to stumble through 2 hours of sports talk just by myself here today. I have a fun show coming up, and that brings us to the top of the mind, powered by BMW of Des Moines, Scott Long and his crew over at BMW of Des Moines, Hickman and 100th in Irvindale. Check them out for any new used cars, a great service department for any maker model. Get over there. Thank you to the guys at BMW of Des Moines for all of their support of the Murph and Andy Show. And top of mind, it's a clip show today. A clip show. Yeah, TV shows do it. Why can't radio shows? We've had almost 11 years of shows, and that's too much content to get to in 1 2-hour period. So, and also, some things are lost to the ether. Some things that you have suggested on Twitter just don't exist anymore. But I keep pretty good archives, so I put together a clip show with some of my favorite stuff, along with those suggestions from many of you on Twitter. Keith and Andy gave me some ideas as well. Here's a quick rundown of what you can expect over the next 2 hours of what I expect to be a fun show. We'll talk Christmas shoes. It's that time of year. We do it every year. Andy's vasectomy. The Murphy House bat drama. Kirk Ferentz remembers 20 years at Iowa season by season. We've got the NPR Sports Cash, a best of from Chris Hassel, a best of with Boston Bobby, and your favorite unnecessary censorship of all time, and that is saying something. I've done more than 400 of those. Now, before we get that started, I did want to take a quick look at today's stories. This is a sports show on a sports station. We're live and local, and we have local sports to talk about. So before we get to the clip show, I did want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the world of sports around here. Iowa State beats UMKC 79-61 last night. I guess they don't like to be called UMKC anymore. Iowa State beat Kansas City 79-61 last night. The Kangaroos kept it close for a lot of that game. They got within 1 point halfway through the second half, but in the end, the Cyclones pulled away.
Shot blocked by Nixon, and then a great outlet comes back to Nixon for the layup.
What a great play by Tyrese Halliburton. He catches that ball in midair and makes a three-quarter court pass without ever coming to the ground.
And now Williams throws it down low, deflected away by Jacobson, and he saves it in, and Jackson able to knock it free, and a great pass to Halliburton for the layup. Wow, great hustle all the way around by Iowa State.
Halliburton picks up his dribble, gets rid of it to Nixon. Backdoor cut by Iowa State. Bolton, a big right-hand dunk and a foul on the play. Nixon found him, and Bolton hammered it home.
That's John Walters and Eric Heft on the Cyclone Radio Network, courtesy of Learfield IMG College. You heard that game on 100.3 The Bus last night. Again, 79-61 the final score. Three Cyclones finished with 19 points. That's Michael Jacobson, Rajir Bolton, and Tyrese Halliburton. Here is Halliburton and head coach Steve Prohm after the win.
We knew this was going to be, you know, kind of his little struggle just because, you know, coming back from vacation and coming back from, you know, that Bahamas trip, you know, long travel weekend, and then, you know, having to, you know, turn around and come to this game. So we knew it was going to be a tough game.
That was a good win for us. I knew this game, you know, there's a couple games that you circle on your schedule, not because of the opponent. You know, Seton Hall is going to be a tough game for a lot of reasons. On Sunday, but you know, the Northern Illinois game, this game, the game before Christmas, there's a lot of basketball character and mental toughness involved in these games coming home from the Bahamas. We got off to a tough start, really finished the first half well, up 6, could have been up 10, and then we put ourselves in a tough spot in the second half. They got it to about 4, and then we were resilient and were able to make some shots and really push it away down the stretch. But really a tough game, but a really good win, and got to get some rest tomorrow and get these guys some treatment and get ready to go Friday and Saturday.
Iowa State moves to 5-3 on the season. All three losses against good teams. He had that Michigan loss in the Bahamas. Michigan now in the top 5. He had that Seton Hall loss in the Bahamas. Seton Hall ranked 13 at the time, I think 16th now. And the loss at Oregon State. Oregon State, I think 7-1 on the season. And you heard both Tyrese Haliburton and Steve Prohm talk about that. Could have been a trap game for Iowa State, and was a little bit. They struggled to pull away, but late in the game, Razier Bolton really came on, and Iowa State was able to pull away. Up next for the Cyclones, a rematch with now 16th-ranked Seton Hall. They beat the Cyclones 84-76 last Friday in the Bahamas. That was a good game, and it'll be a whole different ball game inside Hilton Coliseum late on Sunday night, an 8 o'clock tip. That's a new thing they're doing this year, so we'll be interested to see what the crowd looks like. I expect a huge crowd. Really the first kind of real Hilton magic we'll have for this season on Sunday night. Now, Seton Hall hasn't played since that game, so they've got back-to-back games against Iowa State and more than a week to prepare. Iowa State obviously had the win last night before they take on Seton Hall for a second time in just over a week. Elsewhere in local sports, Big Ten and Big 12 football awards have been handed out, and a handful of Hawkeyes and Cyclones have been honored. Yesterday afternoon, the All-Big 12 honorees were announced. First team includes Greg Eisworth for a second straight year. That is a big accomplishment for the junior, who played hurt through a lot of the season, wasn't as effective as maybe he could have been. So very interesting to see what he will do next year. Also, Julian Good-Jones and tight end Charlie Kolar are also first-teamers. Kolar, not a Mackey Award finalist, but one of the best tight ends in the country, and certainly has the capability to maybe even win the Mackey Award a year from now. Five Cyclones are second-team honorees, including Brock Purdy, Breece Hall, Deshante Jones, Chase Allen, and Ray Lima. Over to the Big Ten, two Hawkeyes won big awards. Keith Duncan is the kicker of the year, and Tristan Wirfs is the offensive lineman of the year. Wirfs is the first Hawkeye since Brandon Scherff in 2014 to win that honor. No surprise that there weren't many all-conference selections on the offensive side of the ball for Iowa. Wirfs is a first-teamer, obviously. Alaric Jackson, a third-teamer by both the coaches and the media. That's it for the offense. We did go through the defensive awards yesterday, but a quick recap. A.J. Epinesa, first-teamer from both the coaches and the media, while Michael Ojemudia and Geno Stone both made second or third teams. Looking forward to Sunday to find out where these teams head to the bowls. It's really interesting. Somebody must know. But we don't know, and it's as we sit here on Thursday before championship weekend, really a few different slots for each of these teams where they could go. I know some fans want both teams in Orlando, Phoenix, Houston, the San Diego Holiday Bowl, all up in there. So it's going to be interesting. Stay tuned to KXNO. We'll put something out Sunday night on how you can get bowl trips, and then obviously Monday it'll be a big topic on all of our local shows here on 1460 KXNO. This is the Murph and Andy Show. I am Andrew Downs, and without further ado, let's get to our clip show, best of, whatever you want to call it. We're going to start with something that happened earlier this year. Keith showed up to the studio just as the show was starting, and we could tell something wasn't right. He was just kind of out of it. Now, we don't hide much from you on this show. We're pretty open about our lives and how we're feeling on a given day. So Murph told us what was up. He had left his house having just trapped a bat under a bucket inside his house. And he was a little freaked out by it, and he didn't know what to do. The bat was just still sitting in his house. He had to leave to get to the show. So we called his son, Cade, who was home, and Andy tried to walk him through and talk him through eradicating the bat from the Murphy house.
If you're just joining us, my son, Cade, is trying to get rid of a bat that is downstairs at our house. Cade, what's the latest? Have you found the cardboard?
Okay. Yeah, that did not work.
The cardboard didn't work?
Why didn't it work?
No, because I tried to start sliding it under, and then it's like claws like started sticking out from underneath the bucket, and I got really scared, and I ran upstairs.
Oh, boy. Okay. All right. Let's see here.
Couple suggestions we've had from callers.
It started making like a weird like cricket noise.
Yeah.
And I thought I would die, so I ran.
No.
Cade is clearly my son. He does not want to deal with this bat.
It's not going to hurt you. It's not going to hurt you.
All right, Cade, play some.
Oh, God. Its wing is stuck underneath the bucket now. Oh, my God.
All right, just slowly slide the bucket off the wing.
Yeah.
I don't want to. It's
not going to. It's really tiny, Cade. It's just really little.
Yeah, and it.
Yeah, but that wing's got like veins and stuff.
Yeah, it's weird. It's got blood in it.
Oh, it's terrible.
It is it's a mammal. It's all right, Cade.
Oh.
It's just slide that a little bit there, and then go to the other side. Or you know what? Hey, here's the deal. You got that wing pinned underneath there. Hold the bucket down on that wing gently, and then tilt up the other side. You know the bat can't get there if its wing is held under the other side. Slide that.
Sorry, Mr. Bat. I'm doing Christian Bale no justice right now. Oh my goodness.
Jeez, Kate's a big fan of Batman. That's his superhero.
Okay.
By the way, Kate, are the dogs securely closed in upstairs?
Know. Yeah, because that's what happened to Cujo.
One thing at a time here, Dad.
Well, you can't run this bat outside and then have the dogs get out the door. Well, you know,
on the cardboard. I'm going outside.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. You got it. We got it.
We might have it.
You got it?
Okay.
Okay, go outside. Right. Just set it down in the yard and flip that bucket upside down.
Will he fly when he flips it out?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he will.
But not toward Cade.
Well,
maybe.
He might be pissed. Okay, all right. Cade, I'm dying to know what's going on there.
This is the most dramatic show we've ever had.
Cade.
It's the most dramatic show we've ever had.
Cade,
my God. We have lost connection.
Bat bit the phone.
Cade?
All right,
Cade, are you back?
I'm back.
All right, are you back?
Cade, what happened?
All right,
first of all, no profanity.
Screaming. I haven't been profane yet, have I?
No. We're just cautioning you to please not.
Okay, just making sure.
Okay, where's the bat?
It is in my hands. Like, not like physically, like the cardboard is the barrier between us.
Okay.
And that bat is not happy with me right now.
Okay, no, he doesn't even know who you are. He's scared to death of you.
I straight clipped its wing, I feel like. Not actually, but it's not happy.
Hopefully
not happy.
Now, you have it in the bucket with the cardboard on top of it, and you're taking it outside?
Yes, I'm walking in the middle of my neighborhood with a bucket and cardboard in my hand.
Well, just turn it loose now. Toss that thing down on
the yard.
Creek.
No, you don't have to go all the way to the creek.
You don't have to take it up to Drake or anything.
You can do it right there.
It doesn't need to go to a biologist.
I'm kind of just chilling now.
Yeah, okay. Did you flip it up? Did you open it up?
Yeah, I just kind of set it down.
Okay.
Just chilling on the ground.
He is? Okay. Well,
now you can turn and walk away.
Just pick up the bucket and go.
And make sure the doors are closed and the dogs aren't out.
All right. I appreciate your help, gentlemen.
Oh, you seem calm now.
But now you need to go wash the bucket down and take a shower because you might have bat mycetosis all over you.
All right, I can do that.
All right, take a shower. Text me when you can let me know that both dogs are secure.
Will do.
Okay, this is your finest moment.
We don't want any Cujo. Yeah, good job, Kay.
This is your finest moment.
Good job.
We'll watch Batman later. All right, thank you, Kay.
There he goes.
All right, well done.
He got it to work. That's great.
It's like we've gone into live theater, it's real.
There was some real panic there for a second. There was some drama.
Yeah, he was just clearly my son. I'm sure there's some guys that are like, wow, you can't be this scared of a bat. But I'm a little freaked out by these flying rodent-looking creatures, too.
Unscripted drama right there from earlier this year. This is the Murph and Andy Show, 1460 KXNO. A little clip show for you here. My favorite part of that may be Andy telling Katie he has to go take a shower because bat mycetosis. I don't know if that's a true thing or not. And honestly, I don't want to know. I know I could Google it. One of my favorite things about Andy is I'm never quite sure. He plays things so straight. I'm never quite sure if he's lying or if he's telling the truth. I'm just going to assume. I don't know. I don't know if there's a thing called bat mycetosis. I do know. I bet Kay took a shower, and I am one of those guys who's like, oh, how could you be this afraid of a bat? But you put me in front of like a decent sized spider, and I'm running away. Moving along here. A few years ago, Andy had his second child. He decided that was it for him. So we partnered with the Iowa Clinic to get him a vasectomy. And again, because we don't hide much from you, Andy decided he wanted to do it while on the air. So he started the show at 2:00 in studio. At 2:30, when we took our break, he got in his car, drove over to the clinic, and underwent the procedure with the plan to be back by the end of the show, back in studio by the end of the show. Now, I can't be sure. I haven't done enough research. But as far as I know, this is the only radio broadcast of a vasectomy in history.
Andy Fales has called in on the Grip Tight Foundation Repair Celebrity Hotline. He is under the knife getting a vasectomy as we speak. Andy, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I am under the knife, or I guess technically I'm above it. I don't feel anything. I can't really tell what's going on. It's a little strange. They have somebody fooling around down there, but other than that, I can't even tell. I got a free Gatorade. It's all good.
I, Hey, Andy, you sound fine then. Let's play Guess Whose Birthday. Hey, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I can play. I'm ready. There's a burning smell, but go ahead.
No. Oh, man. No, we're not going to have you play. So you're doing okay. You're not in any pain.
I'm ready to play. I'm in zero pain. No. Dr. Glowacki is doing what he does.
How long have you been in the process?
I got here, what did you just say?
In the process.
Halfway done. He's halfway done. since about 3:05 or so, I guess, maybe 10 minutes.
Maybe we should have his doctor play Guess Whose Birthday.
The doctor shouldn't be paying attention to what Andy's saying, right?
No, I want his attention
right.
on his job at hand. I'll play Guess Whose Birthday.
No, we're not going to have you do that, Andy, because Chris Williams is on standby to play this today. He's so excited for the opportunity to humiliate Scott Sipker. We won't have you do this while you're going through this procedure. Do you think?
I know it would be kind of ironic for me to play Guess Whose Birthday on a day I'm getting a vasectomy and do more like a Guess Whose Not Birthday.
Whose potential birthday?
Guess who won't be having a birthday?
All right. Do you still feel like you're going to limp out of there and rejoin us by the end of this hour?
Yes, I do. I think the only thing that would stop me is some sort of traffic accident. Or traffic jam. No, I feel fine. I feel my legs fine. Like I said, I got a stick shift. I was a little worried about that. A stick shift in my truck, that is. It's a manual transmission.
How big what
is
it?
What is that?
How the innuendo out of there. No, I think I'm gonna be fine.
Andy, how wide is the numb area down there? How numb
very,
is it?
It's not very wide. I mean, I can feel the exam table under my butt and everything.
Are you sitting down? Are you laying down? And when you look down, what do you just see the doctor's head? Is there like a barrier that you can't see below your waist?
No, I'm on my back. There's no barrier. There's like a little blanket there. There's no giant mustachioed nurse in here or anything. I mean, it's the urban legends are BS at this point.
Oh, Chris.
I mean, there's no draconian looking clamps or there isn't.
Are your legs up in stirrups?
No. I was kind of hoping I'd get the stirrups and stuff so I could experience what the women do there just for a moment. But no, it's just this little extension from the table that comes out and I'm lying on my back.
Andy, as you have this,
what'd you say, doctor? We're done. I'm done.
You're done?
All tied up?
I'm done. Yeah, it's all tied up, all repackaged.
Do you feel like half the man you used to be, or how are you feeling?
I feel exactly the same as I did when I walked in.
Well, your friend Chris Hassel just sent out a tweet that he is anchoring SportsCenter while his friend and former coworker Andy Fales is getting a vasectomy live on the radio, and Chris ends his tweet with, "Why did I leave the Murph and Andy show?" You know, this is Chris's great regret now that this is happening.
Well, I don't think this has ever happened before. I think we're making radio history here. We're pioneers, as usual. Let me just repeat that so that Dr. Glowacki can hear that. So Chris Hassel from the desk of SportsCenter at ESPN has just sent out a tweet.
He's listening to this.
That he's listening to this broadcast right now, and he's regretting ever leaving Des Moines.
This would do it.
Does the doctor want to come on?
That's fantastic. Dr. Glowacki, say hello. How are you doing?
What, was he a good patient, doctor?
You're not going to be able to answer here.
Oh.
Hello.
Doctor, thank you for joining us live on the air here. What was Andy a good patient?
He did great. He's wonderful.
No problems?
Nope. He didn't pass out or anything.
Is he average, doctor? An average patient down there? Or anywhere?
He's a great patient.
Okay,
he's exceptional.
How long, start to finish, did this take?
About 10 minutes.
And it's okay with you if he gets in the car and comes back to the studio and he finishes the radio show?
Sure, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, you come highly recommended, and it's very nice of you to go along with this and let us have our show while you're doing a procedure, a surgery on air. We really appreciate it.
No, he did great. Everything went well.
Thank you, sir.
All right, you take care.
You too. That is.
Wait, did you just ask for a doctor's note on the air?
Well, yes. I want to be sure that you're really there.
A note from the doctor?
Yes. Well, I would hope that. I mean, you've missed 40 minutes of show for your little procedure.
All right. You know, the longer we stay on here, the lower the chance.
Andy, just one question: did the doctor take off his gloves before grabbing your phone?
He did not. No, I held the phone to his ear. He didn't touch my phone.
It's a fair question.
What a visual!
It's a fair question. All right, Andy, try to hurry back to the studio.
Will do. Thank you, guys.
All right, thank you, and congratulations. Wow.
I hear a few Marconis coming this show's way.
First
this week, Des Moines City View. Next week, Marconis.
Look out the window right now. You see what's pulling up? The ice truck. I didn't even know they had those anymore. He's going to sit on a bag of ice.
That is Andy's vasectomy. This is Murph and Andy, 1460 KXNO. Andy did get back to the studio before the end of the show. He was in studio for the audio drop of the day that day, and he hasn't had any kids since, so I think everything went well. And he seriously had as easy of a recovery from that as anybody I know. I know a handful of guys who have had this done, and you know, for the most part, it's fairly simple. I'm sure there are complications and horror stories out there, but Andy really was fine. I think he went out. That was a Friday. I'm pretty sure he went out drinking that night, and really had no issues all weekend or anything like that. I will be checking Twitter throughout the show, @Murph_Andy. I am @AndrewCDowns, but you can always tweet at us, monitoring both accounts, and I'll hit some of your tweets. Breck says, take a breath and slow down. Yeah, you know, Breck, I'm not used to doing the show by myself. I'm in here alone, and so to get hyped up for the show, I slammed a Red Bull, like, right before we went on air. So I'm gonna blame that for especially that first few minutes of me just kind of rapid-fire talking. I'm going to take a break now, take that breath, and when we come back, Kirk Ferentz will take us through 20 years as the Iowa head football coach. This is the Murph and Andy Clip Show, and it's Des Moines Sports Station 14.
Prohibited.
It's Murph and Andy Show, Des Moines Sports Station 1460 KXNO. I'm Andrew Downs, taking you through some of our favorite moments from the past 10-plus years of the show in a clip show. The Murph and Andy Show is powered each day by WCI Pools and Spas. They bring you the quickie polls and have for years now. They are one of our most loyal sponsors, and we truly appreciate their support. Check them out, WCIPoolsAndSpas.com. Each spring, we broadcast from the ACE Coaching Clinic, where high school and college coaches from throughout the Midwest come together, and it gets us great access to Mark Farley, Matt Campbell, and Kirk Ferentz out of the season when we can do some things a little differently. We don't have games to talk about. We did that this spring with Kirk Ferentz, who had just finished his 20th season at the helm of the Hawkeyes. Andy and Scott Sipker took him through his career and asked for a memory that stood out from each season. And remarkably, Ferentz was able to do so with no preparation ahead of time. Here is 20 years with Kirk Ferentz. This is the Murph and Andy Show on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
One thing that Murph and I have always kind of wanted to do with you, and let's do this now, with 20 years in the books, look back over the 20 seasons that you had here as the head coach of the Hawkeyes. And I'm going to just start with the year, give you a couple of cues, and you just, if you can, just kind of tell me what comes to mind, the memory that pops out about these particular seasons. And it's going back quite a while, so hopefully this is not too tough of a test for you here. But let's start with your first year as head coach, 1999. 1-10, your record. I probably didn't need to remind you of that.
I remember that one, yeah.
What is the first thing that pops into your mind about that year, how that went?
You know, it was a tough year because everything was new for everybody. We had an entirely new staff. We all came from different places. So we were new to the players. They were new to us. You know, you're coaching at that point, not only trying to coach players, but you're learning their names, their hometowns, things like that. So you really hadn't recruited the guys. But the bottom line is, I think probably what I remember the most and was happiest about, near the end of the season, I think it's our next last game, we went up to Madison. Ron Dayton set the NCAA rushing record. They clinched the Rose Bowl. And pretty much they could name the score in that game, but the one thing I remember leaving, I just told our players, that's what we're striving for. That's the goal right there. That's what we're trying to create here in our environment. And then the next week, instead of going backwards, our guys came out and played extremely well against a ranked Minnesota team. We lost it. We had an opportunity to win it in the fourth quarter. Couldn't get it done. But I guess where I'm going on this whole thing, the team kept working. They improved. We might have taken a step back here or there, but they got back up on their feet and kept working, and that gave us a chance to move forward.
Okay, next year you won three games in 2003 and 2009. That was the year you played at number one Nebraska.
Yep.
Yeah. Quick thought that pops into your head about that year.
I still remember being mad about they called it intentional grind. Our quarterback, our guy got held on the screen. Yeah, nowhere to go with the football. But anyway, I'm still mad about that call. And I remember the official, too. But anyway, moving on. We had a fluke win against Michigan State. But then the good thing is we finally played a complete game out at Penn State.
Yeah, I remember that.
Beat them, came back here, looked at Northwestern. They had beaten Michigan like 55-52 the week before. I remember sitting at Norm Parker's office going, oh, my God, what are we going to do here? But we found a way to beat them, and that was our first win over a nationally ranked team. And then the next week, the last thing I remember about that, we lost to Minnesota. Bob Sanders got hurt. We had a second-team guy came in. He took two false steps on a play action. He was about 40 yards from the ball, but he took two steps, and they beat us over the top. And, you know, that hurt to lose that game. Could have been three in a row, all that. But in retrospect, I try to find positives. In my mind, I said, you know, that's probably for the better, because maybe if we'd won, we would have thought we had it figured out, winning three straight. It was a good reminder that we still had a lot of work to do.
Memory is a steel trap. Yeah, Sean McVay, eat your heart out. Wow, he's got nothing on you. 2001, you're 7-5, and that season ends with the Cy-Hawk game because it's 2001.
Yeah, 9/11 obviously affected that. And, you know, that was a game where it was a breakthrough year for us to win six and go to a bowl game and then win the bowl game. That was certainly great. Probably my most vivid memory of that year would have been the Indiana game. I think that was as big as any. We were teetering back and forth with them. Randall L was our quarterback, who's as dynamic of a player as we played against outside of maybe Barkley from Penn State. And, you know, at some point we just had to dig in and figure out we're going to find a way to beat this guy. And I think at halftime there's a turning point. So we got it done, and I don't think if we'd not been successful in that game, I'm not sure that thing would have turned out the way we wanted it to.
2002 is a year that many Hawkeye fans probably list is their favorite year, one of their favorite years. Go to the Orange Bowl. Is there something that stands out about that year that maybe people don't immediately think of that you do?
You know, obvious, the wart there was we lost in the second half to Iowa State, and we had total control in the first half and basically folded in the second half. And you know, nothing to be happy about, but that's life and those things happen. 2 weeks later, we're at Penn State. We were basically in the same situation. We had Penn State on the ropes. They roared back, pardon the pun, but in the second half, they just came screaming back. And we dug in and at least went into overtime and got it done. So to me, there was real demonstrated growth from 2 weeks prior to that. And that was my thing after the Iowa State game. I told our guys, you know, we had a plate of terrible third quarter, put them right back in position. But we still had that fourth quarter to recover, and we couldn't get it done. So at least 2 weeks later, we were good enough to make that step.
Do you feel like that if you win that Iowa State game, that the rest of the season maybe you don't go undefeated?
Who knows? You know, it's such a fine line. But, yeah, there's certainly no guarantees that we would have. If we had, that would have been great. But, yeah, sometimes you just have to learn from tough experiences. And I've heard Dan Gable talk about that. And he hasn't been around many losses. So I think, you know, if anybody knows about what you take away from an adverse outcome, you know, certainly he's an expert on that.
2003, you follow up the 2002 season with another double-digit win season, 10-3 that season. You win that Outback Bowl over Chris Leak, as I recall.
Yeah, sure did. And Nathan Chandler was not Brad Banks, but he did a great job playing. And that was kind of that team. We had a couple ups and downs. I remember we lost over Purdue. That was kind of a tough one for everybody. It knocked us out of title contention, all that. But the guys kept playing. We ended up finishing up with a great game against Florida. And Nathan Chandler probably played his two best games of his life. Our victory against Michigan, played outstanding. Mm-hmm. And then the bowl game finished up as well as you can.
I think most fans remember 04 as the Capital One Bowl year. What about you?
Yeah, I told the group earlier, I referenced that game a little bit. This year's bowl game is a little bit like that. When I saw LSU's defense on film, I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, right.
Same thing I said when I saw Michigan State's or Mississippi State's defense this year. I was like, oh, boy. You know, these guys were at top of the SEC. Mississippi State was this year. So, You know, as big a play as that was, and the miracle play and all that, I always tell people the miracle is that we weren't losing by 15 at that point in the game. That's a miracle.
You can actually get into it with touchdown
exactly.
there. 2005, you're 7-5. That started, the Iowa State game was a rough one for you guys.
Yep.
It was 23-3. What about that season? You start off, I think, ranked number 8 in the country, ranked high.
I remember playing up there. Drew Tate was, Drew is a very emotional guy. He was totally out of gas before the game started. He was so worked up. We had about 3 turnovers, and I remember Drew knocking himself out. He threw an interception, knocked himself out. So there's not much good to remember about that one. And then we stumbled a little bit during the year, and I remember I was coming back really strong last couple games, finished up senior day against Minnesota, kind of walked away from them, won at Wisconsin the week before. So that team showed a lot of heart.
06, you hosted number 1 Ohio State.
Yeah, we did a night game, and a lot of electricity in the stadium. We couldn't match up with them. I think we were at 5-1 in that year. I think starting out, and then lost all but one the other stretch. So we went 1-5. And to me, that we started to slip for whatever reason. I don't know if we weren't handling prosperity very well. I think that really is kind of what it got to, a little entitlement, maybe that type of thing. But we did rally and played. We had a good month of preparation in the bowl game. And then we played Texas lights out. Speaking of calls I'm mad about, I still remember that call. That probably would have made a difference in that game.
But, I was there for that game, and I'm mad about it. I can imagine how mad you are.
So, anyway.
07, you're 6-6. You finished 6-6. Don't go to a bowl that year.
Yep. Well, to me, it was a continuation of what had started the year before. I look at that middle of the 06 season till the middle of the 07 is like one of our worst stretches. And we just had it. We had to work through it. We played better in the second half of the season, but we lost our last game. We were all set to go to the Insight Bowl. We lost that game. We were bowl eligible, but nobody in our camp felt like we were bowl worthy. So, no sour grapes there. We just didn't do what you have to do.
In 08, 9-4 in 08 with a big rebound season. That Sean Green ran wild.
Yeah, that was a really gratifying season. A lot like this past season, in my mind, we were. 3-1, I think. Then we went to 3-3, or maybe we were 3-0 and went 3-3. I think we lost 3 games by 10 points, 11 points, something like that. But they're tough to lose. But our guys were doing things right on a daily basis. And then we ran the tail. I'm taking it back. I think we won 6 out of 7 after that. Lost over to Illinois on a last second field goal. But that team just they worked hard. They were great together, and a lot of close games. But just. Yeah, just kept improving and really finished in a way everybody could be proud of.
09, I think everybody remembers another one of our favorite seasons. Yep. 11-2 in the Orange Bowl. So many memories from that season. What is one that stands out to you?
Well, I mean, anytime you have a season like that, you have to have some crazy things happen. The crazy ricochet play where Sash got it against Indiana. We were in trouble there. I mean, that was a miracle play. And if that doesn't happen, we're going down in that game, too. So Indiana pops up again. And then probably my favorite memory is just the defense against Georgia Tech. Norm, I remember seeing Norm about 3 weeks before the game. He had an old manila folder from, like, 1971. And he held it up in front of me, and he goes, I got it. You know, one of those deals. And he did. He got it. I mean, we nailed him on defense. It was just a great defensive game.
2010, 8-5. You go and win the Insight Bowl. Won at Michigan there. You remember that?
Yeah, we won up there. That was a gratifying win. But we lost close games in that season. That was really frustrating. Felt like we, didn't quite maximize our opportunities. Good news is we were able to rally back in the bowl game and had a really good month and beat a good Missouri team, certainly a really good Missouri team. So that was a highlight.
I think a lot of us remember 2011 for the Cy-Hawk game that year, 44 for the triple overtime. What about you?
Crazy game. Yeah, it was just a crazy game. It's one that I remember the play, actually, the last play of the game. So, yeah, that's not much fun, but it was a crazy game.
I think we might actually make it all the way through this list.
Okay.
2012, 4-8. Not a one you probably want to remember too much, but I bet you that's stuck in your craw.
Oh, absolutely. We were 4-2 and had a chance. We weren't a great team, but we were 4-2. But for whatever reason, we just we kind of split a little bit. We just didn't play good football. It didn't look like anything like what we wanted to look like as a football team. And, you know, if anything good came out of it, we had some really good kids on the team. But it really caused us, I think, to go back and re-examine a lot of things we're doing and take account of things and kind of led into 13.
13 is a year that began with a loss to who?
13 was Northern Illinois. Yeah, exactly. they were coming off the Orange Bowl, I think, or yep. Going to it. I can't remember which. But the thing I remember about that season, all of our losses were two good football teams. They were all really good teams. And we competed hard in all those, kind of like the 08 season. Mm-hmm. The record was not quite as good, but it was a team that was really committed. We had great young players, and I thought we really took a positive step in that season.
All right, 2014, this is Rudock and Bethard kind of battling it out here.
Kind of back and forth, and we just weren't quite there, you know, all during the season. And, you know, probably the low light of that game, which sticks out in my mind, would be the last game of the season in Kinnick. Against Nebraska, we did about everything you could do wrong in a game.
Overtime.
Yeah, in overtime, and how, you know, they did some things wrong too, obviously, but that was kind of like a defining moment for me, and that's where we really went back to the drawing board and said we got to really kind of take a look at this whole thing, because you know, I mean, we turned it over in the red zone, gave up two punts. I mean, right down the list, you know, it was bad football.
2015, another favorite.
Yeah, and that team was, yeah, just, you know, the way they did things. And it was such a fine line, kind of like 04, is every game was a fine line. There was no real dominant performances necessarily, but we found a way to win. Those guys were tight. They were close. We had, it was our least talented team based on NFL draft. I think Austin Blythe was the only guy drafted off that ball club. Yeah, we really played good team football and, you know, found a way to. And you know, we were one snap away from the playoffs. You know, we are one play away against Michigan State.
Andrew's still sore over that one snap.
Yeah,
killing him. 2016, 8-5, and the number two Michigan is the one that stands out to me.
Yeah, the thing there, we didn't show up against Penn State the week before. No excuses. We just you never got our hands up and fought. So it couldn't have been any worse. And then, you know, we come back here and we're playing a team getting ready to go to the playoffs. And it had been killing everybody. So, okay, now what are we going to do? And our guys really stood up. They fought, competed, and you know, we found a way to win. It was a great, great night.
2017, the Ohio State game, is that?
Yeah, your most obviously. Vivid memory? You know, yeah. I mean, you don't beat Ohio State often. Not many people in our conference have beaten them on a consistent
certainly
basis.
Certainly not like that.
And to do it like that is just it was crazy. So it was just one of those games where everything clicked, and our guys just, you know, couldn't have played a better game in all phases.
Most vivid memory from last year.
From last year? Boy, that's a great question. You know, I think the bowl game was probably the culmination of everything. Just we're playing a team that, again, was absurdly talented on defense. We didn't move the ball necessarily very well, but we got enough done. Played great on defense, but I'd have to put it in broader context. To me, that's the beauty of football. You know, it was a game where we won on defense and did some important things, just enough to get it done the other way. Flip it over to our last game in Kinnick against Nebraska. We couldn't get a stop on them once they got going. But our offense, you know, bailed us out and made the plays that we had to make. And I think that's really the beauty of football. It's not always football or offense or defense or special teams. It's a mixture of, and teams that understand that and have a chance. And this team was like the 08 team in that, you know, they showed up every day, worked extremely hard, and, you know, gave themselves a chance to win every time they went out there.
There you go. Wow.
That's 20 years right there.
Passed with flying colors there. That's 20 years looking back with Kirk Ferentz. Vivid memories from each and every one. Kirk, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it very much.
Always great to be on air with you guys.
Murph and Andy Show, 1460 KXNO, a clip show, and that was a lot of fun to remember Kirk's entire career at Iowa. The man's mind is like a steel trap, and I've been an Iowa fan my whole life and an adult for a good portion of his 20 years, 21 years now at Iowa, and I couldn't tell you a lot of those things. I mean, obviously, he gets paid to do that, but some of the vivid memories he has and the way he can remember how those seasons went and, you know, things, plays from games 18, 19 years ago is remarkable. Kirk's career is still going. He's got a chance for a sixth 10-win season and maybe an outside chance at a sixth top 10 finish. When we come back, one of my all-time favorite bits, which started on Sound Off over on Channel 13 and moved to our show, it's the NPR Sports Cash. That's next on the Murph and Andy Clip Show, 14. Welcome back to the Murph and Andy Clip Show here on 1460 KXNO. Andrew Downs with you, taking you through some of our favorite and your favorite moments over the 10-plus years in the history of this show. The Murph and Andy Show is powered each day by Heartland Tire and Auto Center. Travis Thompson and the guys have what you need to get you on the go at any of their shops in Ankeny, Waukee, Boone, or Creston. Check them out at heartlandtireandauto.com. I love the NPR Sportscast. Paul Robin Pixner and Elliot Feinberg do their best to talk sports to an NPR audience that doesn't really care about sports. This is a thing that started over on Sound Off on Channel 13 and migrated over here to the Murph and Andy Show at some point. Now, this segment goes back to the 2018 NCAA tournament where the guys pick each game in the first round. You may think this will sound out of date, but as you will hear, there is very little actual basketball analysis in these picks. It's the Murph and Andy Show Clip Show on 1460 KXNO.
Let's get it started with the 1 seed Virginia going against the 16 seed UMBC.
Well, I'll tell you, Keith, this seems like a tough call, but our staff here at NPR did a deep dive and was able to find out that the name of the team of the Virginia basketball hoops is the Cavaliers, while the University of Maryland Baltimore County, known colloquially as UMBC, is the Retriever. Now, a Retriever is a dogged, tireless little competitor, while a Cavalier, on the other hand, is a haughty, supercilious character prone to overconfidence. I think anyone in his or her right mind would pick UMBC, Keith.
Creighton against Kansas State out of the Big 12.
Kansas State is the Wildcats. Creighton is the Blue Jays. Creighton is the higher seed, but we at NPR find that to be laughably ironic because in actuality, Wildcats, specifically feral domesticated cats, are much to blame for the dramatic decrease in American songbird populations. A typical wild cat can eat as many as 9 Blue Jays in one day. I'll take Kansas State, but not with a clear conscience, Keith.
Arizona against Buffalo.
I might ask, what is the name of the Arizona basketball hoops team?
The Wildcats.
Wildcats again. Well, in Arizona, that could either be the Jaguar or the Ocelot, as they're both indigenous. But there is a huge difference between an Ocelot and a Jaguar, so I would need to know which one it is.
It's just the Wildcats. Again, they are the 4 seed, and Buffalo is the 13.
Well, in that case, I'll take a city known for its blue-collar work ethic over a state known for blasé retirement communities any day. Buffalo is the pick.
The 3, Tennessee, against the 14, Wright State.
Tennessee, yes, the Volunteers. Now, they were originally called the Tennesseemen, but that name fell out of favor for some reason. We here at NPR, however, still favor them in this matchup.
Okay, the next game is the 2, Cincinnati, the 2 seed, against the 15, Georgia State.
Cincinnati and the state of Georgia have a lot of history going all the way back to the early 1800s when Cincinnati became an important receiving point for fugitive slaves, many of whom were from Georgia. And many of their descendants would later return to Georgia and other points south in what came to be known as the Dixon-Mason Path of Retrospective Inversion Migration. And thus, I'll take Cincinnati.
We now move to the West region, the 8 Missouri against the 9 Florida State, FSU.
Yes, Missouri playing the Seminole Tribe of Florida, who are known for the green corn dance. The tribe's best player is a chief known as Osceola, who rides an Appaloosa horse named Renegade, giving the Seminoles the advantage and the victory.
The 5 seed is Ohio State. The 12 seed, coached by T.J. Otzelberger, is South Dakota State, the Jackrabbits.
Yes, I am very well versed in reading these bracket charts, as you call them, and I see SDSU playing 2 matches in the Western region. They will play the state of Ohio and the city of Houston. Clearly, the NAACP selection committee putting SDSU in a tough spot here. I have them losing both.
Number 7, Texas A&M against number 10, Providence in the West region.
Yes, the Providence Frying Pans facing the Aggies of Texas Auntie M, founded by Clara Blandich, who played the aunt of Dorothy Gale in the motion picture Wizard of Oz. Ms. Blandich, of course, penning just before her death, quote, "I am now about to make the great adventure," moments before swallowing a bottle of sleeping pills and putting a plastic bag over her head in the actress's explosive final act. We take Texas Auntie Anne.
That is Paul Robin Pixner of the NPR Sportscast. We'll get back to him in just a moment. We're now moving to the East Regional, where we are rejoined by Elliot Feinberg, number 5, West Virginia, and number 12, Murray State.
I'm going to take West Virginia here because their coach, their manager of the basketball hoops team there, Robert Huggins, an eccentric, high-waisted fellow with a large jaw and a propensity for courtside flatulence that's known to be distracting to opponents. He's a bear of a man who was once cited for eating his entire dinner directly out of the Ryan Steakhouse buffet without ever using a plate or sitting down.
6-seed Florida against 11 St. Bonaventure.
Florida. Florida, a state of whorehouses, carjackings, and general ill repute. St. Bonaventure, on the other hand, was a very devout Catholic of the Middle Ages. He once ate nothing but rats for a year to show God how sorry he was for drawing pictures of naked women. Whatever. Florida's the pick.
The 7-seed is Arkansas. The 10-seed is Butler. Who do you like between Arkansas and Butler?
I like Butler.
The 2 is Purdue. And the 15, Cal State Fullerton.
The Titans, they call themselves. In basketball hoops, in Greek mythology, though, the young Perseus defeated all sorts of titans, from the mighty Kraken to the wicked, ugliest sin of a whore, Medusa. But did he ever face a Boilermaker? We don't think so, and we're not sure we like the odds. We'll take Purdue.
We go to the Midwest region, and we are rejoined by Paul Robin Pixner.
Yes, I'm Paul Robin Pixner.
The 5 is Clemson. The 12 is New Mexico State.
I'm going to be honest. I did no research on this game. I have no record of this game. I did not see it in the bracket table. I apologize.
Would you like to just make a guess?
I will go Clemson advancing. Of course, the Clemson Wildcats. Moving on.
Clemson Tigers is the pick. Number 4, Auburn against the 13, Charleston.
Yes, I did my research on this game. Two teams from the Deep South will try to be on their best behavior. They're playing this game in San Diego, Auburn, Alabama, playing Charleston, South Carolina. Only one Confederate flag will wave in San Diego. It will be that of Auburn.
The 7 is Rhode Island. The 10 is Oklahoma.
Well, we're going with the University of Oklahoma, known as UO, because they're playing the smallest team in the nation. And as we know at the NPR Sportscast, it's not good to be small on a basketball court.
The 2-seed Duke against the 15, Iona.
Yes, Duke, one of the most legendary schools, led by one of the most legendary coaches of all time, Mike Kurzizewski. And Duke will beat Iowa. Why? Because no one from the University of Iowa is in the area. They haven't checked into any hotels, and they have no...
Paul Robin, I'm sorry to interrupt, but it's Iona, not Iowa. Right. Duke and Iona.
Iowa has decided to get a jump start on spring studies. We here at the NPR Sportscast are just fine with that. Duke, moving on, in basket hoops, though Iowa is clearly the standard in academic excellence.
It's, never mind.
Thank you to Paul Robin Pixner and Elliot Feinberg from the NPR Sportscast. I don't know exactly how they did, but they did call the first ever 16-seed upset of a 1-seed in UMBC and Virginia. We've got a full hour of the Murph and Andy Clip Show, including the best of Chris Hassel, Christmas Shoes, Boston Bobby, and the most requested version of This Week in Iowa Unnecessary Censorship of All Time. This is the Murph and Andy Show on Des Moines Sports Station 1460 KXNO.